First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, aka Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
There's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation. But the clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world you stay you wherever you go. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Where the line between neighbor and nightmare is razor thin. Welcome to Hidden Killers. With Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
The case of Richard Allen, it is going on, and more questions and answers being brought out in that courtroom. And it really starts to make me wonder, are we going to have a jury that can settle on a single answer here? Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, defense attorney and former prosecutor. This is really very interesting. We don't have any sort of cameras in the courtroom, so we're relying on the reporters and the people on the ground. We have Attorney Bob Mata, who's there for us right now and checking it out every single day in the courtroom. And what we're learning is kind of interesting. Seems to be going in the way of the defense better than I was expecting it to, just with seeming the lack of evidence that the prosecution has tying Richard Allen to the crime. What's your thoughts thus far?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the prosecution kind of came in perhaps a little overconfident because they had the alleged confessions. But you got to tie that to objective corroborative evidence to show those confessions are reliable. And I'm not sure how much of that they have. And so I think sort of people are wondering, like, hey, where's the substance here? What's really going to tie this guy besides someone who might be experiencing mental health issues giving an alleged confession?
You know, judging by all of the decisions that were made by Judge Gull in the years leading up to this, and just the overall attitude and decorum that we had seen out of the prosecution, out of the investigators, all it was very much a, like, screw you, we have our case. We're not going to listen to any of your motions. We're not going to grant any of your requests. We got it. And now here we are, and it's like, still waiting. Like, do you have anything that you're bringing to the table here? Or is it pretty much everything we speculated on that we already knew they had, which wasn't much. And I'm wondering how much of an echo chamber they ended up finding themselves in these past many years to think that their case was as strong as it is. And now we're seeing this thus far. It's not very strong.
Yeah, no, Tony, I remember when I was a prosecutor, sometimes, you know, you get in this group think mindset. I tried to stay out of it, but some folks would. And they would say, oh, gosh, this case is strong. It's got a confession. That's all you need. It's a slam dunk. Well, that's not always all you need. And so it's sort of, you know, be among people who are agreeing with you and saying, yeah, your case is strong. Don't sweat it. But once you get to the jury trial, it's sometimes a different story.
What's your take on how the Richard Allen confessions are playing thus far to that jury? We've seen literally a note. It was a reporter tried to recreate what it looked like. And it looked like that of a kindergartner who was confessing to stealing some cookies or something. It was just, the writing was all over the board. It was different sizes. It was on different lines. It didn't really make a lot of sense. And then at the end, I hope I can tell the parents I'm sorry. It did not seriously look like any sort of confession from any sort of sane person. I know they've added in there saying, well, he said it 60 times as well. Still haven't heard that. We still haven't even heard any sort of audio. If these things happened over the phone, we haven't heard that either. I think that would be kind of a strong piece of evidence that the prosecution would want to bring in there for these slam dunk confessions that they have, would they not?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the prosecution is going to want to try to present evidence that Richard Allen was of sound mind when he was giving these alleged confessions. And that's going to be tough to do as well, especially when you look at what that note looks like. And so, you know, a confession is strong. That's always going to have an impact on the jury, no doubt about it. But it's got to be something that's reliable, and it can't be something that's all over the board and questionable.
If the audio of him giving those confessions sounds anything like those notes look, it's not going to be very compelling. Why do you think we haven't seen any of this audio yet? Is it going to come out at the very end? Is like their, ha-ha, got you, slam dunk? Or, I mean, we've already talked about this stuff in court. I would think it might have already been, you know, brought to light by now. Or are we not going to hear these confessions?
I would think the prosecution would have to try and offer any audio confession that they have to the jury. And it's got to be scrutinized if they do that. You know, we're already several days into the trial. You know, maybe they're saving it for like a big bang at the end. But I think this jury is sort of looking for, hey, what can I hang my hat on if I'm going to vote guilty? And I'm not sure they have a coat rack to do that.
That's a weird thing. They don't really seem to, but they are so gung-ho on their prosecution and their attitude of thinking they really got this. Let's talk about no DNA in this case as well. If we have someone who was, you know, they were cut up, they had their throat slashed multiple times, clothes taken off, put on the wrong people. This was a physical situation. This wasn't, you know, somebody just shot him in the back of the head or something or whatnot. There's somebody, whoever did this, got physically involved with them. And there's zero DNA on the victims. There's some hair from a family member that one of them apparently had in their hand, which I find a little weird. But there's no DNA. But this is not always the case. You know, Koberger as well, there's DNA on the knife sheath, but there's no DNA on the victims themselves, at least that they ever found. So it doesn't necessarily mean there has to be, but is that kind of weird in a situation?
You know, I think the jury might find it weird. There's something that in law that's termed like the CSI effect. Like, you know, jurors want to see forensics. They want to see technical analysis that ties a defendant to a crime. Here, like you said, this was messy. You know, you would expect either DNA transfer onto the skin or onto the clothing. You would expect possibly hairs being left, other things like that. And there's just no evidence of that. And especially when you have kind of a flimsy case that rests on a questionable confession, you want to beef it up with something objective, and they haven't come with it so far.
What about some of these, the timelines? And there's a lot of questions about the state's official timeline, lots of holes being punched into it from some pretty credible witnesses. I first want to talk about the woman, I believe her name is Betsy. I could be wrong, but I think it is. She went regular hiker of the trail in that area, you know, starts at the trailhead every day, kind of knows the cars that are there, knew what Richard Allen's car was. That wasn't a question. And she is sure that day, Richard Allen's car was not there. It was gone. It was there when she started her trail walk, left the trail about the same time the prosecution's timeline says that the girls are being murdered down the hill. Richard Allen's car, she claims, was not in that parking lot at that point in time, meaning if he was out for his walk like he said he was to the police when he volunteered his information, he was gone by that point in time. How powerful is that, considering that is just eyewitness testimony, and there's other eyewitness testimony in this case that is glaringly inaccurate because both people who saw the same thing have very different opinions. But let's talk about this one first.
Yeah, you know, with the with respect to timeline, what the prosecution is a bit handicapped by is it's hard to establish a time of death. They have a relative thought as to when all this went down, but to establish the absolute time can be very difficult. The fact that Richard Allen's car was even in the vicinity, even you know, proximal to the time where this happened, is problematic for the defense. I don't think it's determinative one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. So we have that. I mean, it. She seems to be a fairly reliable witness. Other aspects of that, the time she says she left the parking lot, security camera shows that's when she left the parking lot. So her testimony seems to check out a bit better than some of the younger girls. There's two girls who are testifying on who they saw on the bridge that day. At the time, they were 16. They're now in their 20s. Keep in mind, this happened in 2017, so quite a ways back. But their description of the individual, very different. And they both saw the same person, which really it pokes a lot of holes into the reliability of eyewitness testimony. But is the jury going to throw the baby out with the bathwater on this one, where these two seem to be fairly off in their recollection of who this was? And you have another woman over here that seems to be fairly accurate, according to even timestamps by other sources, you know, but it certainly does put a little bit of fog into the air on just the idea of timelines or eyewitness accounts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, eyewitness accounts are so overrated, in my opinion, because it's so easy to get something wrong, to misremember, to misperceive, to forget something, to inartfully state something, especially when we're talking about years and years later, you know, somebody you saw and what they look like. And so I think that only inures to the benefit of the defense, because the prosecution's going to want some consistencies in terms of what their prosecution witnesses are saying. And there has been a lack of that, at least among some of these witnesses with respect to those eyewitness descriptions.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to see how that all weighs in the mind of the jury. It's exciting that the jurors can actually ask questions in this trial. Can you explain how that works? Because we don't see that in a lot of other jurisdictions, the fact that they can raise their own questions.
Yeah, it's actually big in Colorado where I practice, although I know it's not it doesn't happen in other jurisdictions. So it's great because as attorneys and judges and members of the legal institution, we're thinking about it one specific way, whereas the juror might pick up on something that we didn't even think about that is really critical to the determination of the case. So I think it's so helpful to have those jurors relay their insights, ask their own questions, because it can really blow a case wide open.
When they ask their questions, do they always get answered? I mean, is it like juror has a question, you better have some sort of answer for this?
It depends. In Colorado, the question itself has to comport with the rules of evidence before it will be asked of a witness. But then it is posed to the witness, and the witness does their best to try to answer it. And if there's follow-up questions in Colorado, the jury can ask follow-up questions. So sometimes it is a rather involved colloquy between the jurors and the witness.
How interesting. More places should do that. I love that. I love that that exists here. Let's talk about the devices, the digital footprint of Richard Allen, or lack thereof, because they went into his house. They took 23 devices from Allen's home. And as we've seen in pretty much every case, there's usually some sort of digital footprint going on here, something that shows some sort of premeditation, planning, interest, something of the sort in whatever it is the crime that's being talked about. They went through the 23 devices. They got nothing. There is nothing. All they can say, the only statement of any impact that the prosecution has is, he doesn't have his phone from 2017. Who does? Is my next question.
Yeah, no, it's a reasonable question. And, you know, in our modern era, if someone was going to brutally, you know, slice up and slaughter two young little girls, you'd imagine that there's some kind of motive. There's some reason why they're going to do it. And oftentimes there are internet searches that are corroborative of this motive that say, you know, how do I hide a body? Yeah. Or, you know, where would I find little girls? Stuff like that. There's just none of that to kind of back up what the prosecution is saying Richard Allen did in the devices.
That'd be a fucking weird search to put here. Where do I find little girls?
That's going to get you flagged. Yeah,
that's going to get this. That's going to get this this video flagged. Just that.
Yeah, let's hope not.
But no, I mean, you would think there would be, but there's absolutely nothing. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I really am. I was hoping maybe we had this all wrong. Almost like everybody at the beginning of the Koberger case, before they even found Koberger, where it's like we're criticizing everything. They must be doing, maybe there's something behind the scenes that makes more sense here. You're proving to be just as incompetent as they seem to be all along. I guess I shouldn't be surprised by this, but we're just not seeing a whole lot here that really seems to get to an answer of Richard Allen being the person at that scene. I mean, even the bullet we look at, that was like their smoking gun. There's this stray bullet that was found at the crime scene. Yeah, and now we learn it was after all of the officers combed the scene, who could also have the exact same type of bullet for their weapons as well. Let's see here. You got 30, 40 officers walking through a scene and a stray bullet's on the ground. What on earth makes you think it goes back to the one guy who was out here earlier, that it fell from his gun when a gun wasn't even used in the crime?
Right. Unless they wanted it to have that impression that it went back to Richard Allen. They don't have DNA. They don't have digital forensics. And so, gosh, let's kind of beef up our case. Let's put our finger on the scales a little bit and drop this bullet here that should be related to the suspect's gun to make it seem like we have a better case than we do. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened, but defense is certainly going to argue.
Well, the science behind, it cycled through his gun. I would argue it could probably have cycled through any of the guns. Or a good chunk of them that would have been carried through that scene by those officers that day. Because it's just not that real. And it's an unspent bullet, too, which makes it even less, there was less impact of it on the actual weapon itself.
Right, in a stabbing case. Bizarre.
In a stabbing case, yes. And there's no gun in the video. There's no, frankly, the man doesn't even really look like Richard Allen from what we can tell, you know, or Cy. I mean, it just doesn't add up. I mean, I'm even more baffled now at the charges that were made against Richard Allen. Again, I'm feeling like this all goes back to somebody screwed something up. We had to cover that up, then to cover that up, and they covered and it just turned into this, and they got this guy. Now what do we do? Let's go forward, everybody. See what could possibly go wrong. A lot.
Yeah, totally. And Tony, I mean, you know, the community there has two dead little girls. There's a lot of pressure on law enforcement to come up with some conclusion to hold a person accountable. They think they got the right person, and maybe they got so pot committed that now they feel too embarrassed to relent. And perhaps that's a piece of what's happened.
It's so sad, but I think, I mean, that motivates so many people just not wanting to be wrong, not wanting to be accountable for their actions. But in reality, them not wanting to be wrong, the hurt, the pain, the trauma that just continues to inflict on the families of those little girls that have now been gone since 2017. I mean, they'd be young adults by now, you know, and their parents are sitting there thinking every day, what would have been? Yeah, what would have been had this been actually investigated properly? There's a thought. I think we would be in a very different place, and I think Richard Allen would probably still be working at CVS. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
From the office to a first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation. But clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They combine timeless style with modern performance materials to keep you looking good and feeling comfortable all day, no matter what's on today's agenda. Browse everything from shorts and polos to sweats and crews. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.